Truth Seekers. How you doing? Nasty, nasty weather, and it just keeps rocking and rolling, right? Have you noticed this? We're going to talk about that a little bit momentarily. Oh, by the way, one of our listeners named Brad, not Brad Friedman, Brad in the Minneapolis area, said, Mike, for the first time since I've listened to our local progressive radio station, I was able to hear you clearly. The radio reception is awful where I live, but I installed the AM 950 app, and there you were, crisp and clear. Thanks, Brad. Well, there you go. If you live in Minneapolis, St. Paul area, in the AM 950 area, you have to understand that some of the stations we're on have to power down at sunset, just the way it goes. And AM 950 is one of those. KTLK in LA, I think, is one of those, too. But anyway, if you download the AM 950 app, according to Brad, you can get it crisp and clear. So there you go for you folks in the Minneapolis area, or if you're not even, you know, I mean, maybe someplace else, right? I have to mention the passing of Andy Griffith. Died this morning in Dare County, North Carolina. That county is named after Virginia Dare, by the way. He was 86. Ambulance went to his home at 7 a.m. this morning. He was pronounced dead. The exact cause of his death had not been released, although he had some health problems. So the Sheriff Andy Taylor has died, and Matlock died with him. I will never forget a face in the crowd and the impact that movie had on me. If you want to understand Glenn Beck, see the movie A Face in the Crowd. Right? John Roberts, apparently Supreme Court Chief Justice, has fled the country and has gone to his impregnable island fortress. That's how he describes it. He wound up on the island of Malta today in the middle of the Mediterranean. We were doing the program one night, what, Kathy, a couple of years ago. We get a phone call from Malta. A listener. Well, if you're listening tonight, listener in Malta, you have the U.S. Supreme Court Chief Justice there. Oh, yeah, he'll be teaching a class for 2 weeks. The right-wingers, of course, are after him. They want to tar and feather him because he had the unmitigated gall to using the Constitution to declare that the Obama administration was right in handing off to Congress a bill that Congress passed that involves the tax. Neener, neener, neener. From alternet.org, the wildfire disaster in Colorado seems to be abating a bit as weather turns cooler and more humid and may not reach the destructive levels experienced by Texas last summer. But the saga can and should call forth some reflections not only on the reality of global climate change, but on more specific problems associated with runaway development in dangerous areas and the religious and economic viewpoints that encourage it. At Religion Dispatches, University of Colorado historian Paul Harvey, not the radio guy, but provides a close-up look at how ideology contributed to the Waldo Canyon fire disaster in Colorado Springs. Quote, the very emphasis on fire mitigation and maintenance and reasonable regulation of development in natural fire zones and in what they call the wildland-urban interface. All of that meets resistance from a religious ethic of dominion over the earth that colludes with the libertarian free market enthusiasms of developers who skillfully sell to buyers seeking escape from the Gomorrah of urban America. Yes, amen. Nowhere is that more true than in Colorado Springs, which marries an activist grassroots religious conservatism, faith in the military-industrial complex, and reliance on it, too, you know, money, and an historic Western libertarian hatred of big government, combined with an economic reliance on big government, you know, the military. An vicinity sometimes referred to as the Protestant Vatican for its profusion of religiously conservative activist groups who are crazier than outhouse rats. Well, I added that. Unregulated housing developments into wildland urban interface zones have proliferated over the last generation, such that foothills and obvious fire zones boast some of the region's most geographically attractive housing. And Satan stands at the portal beckoning these fools. Come on. Come on. Yoo-hoo, come build over here. Get rid of those taxes. Gut your fire service and your forest service. Just give me a toehold and I will gobble your ass up. Satan loves to eat religious nutballs, like all of those clustered around Colorado Springs. He's having a feast, isn't he? A federal judge in Texas has found a JetBlue Airways pilot, the one who left the cockpit during a flight and screamed about God and Al-Qaeda, found him not guilty by reason of insanity Tuesday. Well, I hope to shout. Anyone who screams about God and Al-Qaeda has got to be nuts. Just wacko. Of course, that's what every right-winger in America does. So why this? This guy's declared insane. Most of these half-wits have television programs and internet shows and radio programs, right? This poor bastard does the same thing that, oh, I don't know, the moron Glenn Beck does. This guy's declared insane. Glenn Beck gets paid $20 million a year. Go figure. The guy, the Clayton Osborne, he was recently found mentally competent to stand trial after a court-ordered psychiatric evaluation, but he will be sent to a federal mental health facility for further examination until another hearing on or before August 6th. The judge will then decide whether he can be released or should be committed to a mental facility. You remember passengers had back in March had to wrestle him to the floor after he ran through the plane's cabin screaming about Jesus and Al-Qaeda. Oh, my God. A spokeswoman for JetBlue said today that the airline, quote, continues to support the Osborne family. We don't have further comment as we let the judicial process play out. We can confirm he is still employed on inactive status with JetBlue, end quote. Well, that's nice of them to continue to do that. It really is. But this guy had, I guess, one Jesus lesson too many crammed into his poor brain, and one threat from Al-Qaeda terrorists too many crammed into what was left of his poor fevered brain. And the spring breaks. So maybe the folks in Colorado will do something to try to prevent a tragedy like this from well, wait a minute, what am I saying? Nah, that's ridiculous. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. I'll tell you now that they don't mean a thing. Every place I go, I'll think of you. Every song I sing, well, I'll sing for you. Where I come home, I'll bring your friendship.
yet tonight how much he hates these people. It's Mike Malloy.
Please. 21 past the hour. Got my new issue of Changelinks in the at the post office box today. Did you check out the website at Changelinks? That's the alternative paper in L.A., but you don't have to live in L.A. They do have a community calendar in there for the L.A. area, but they also have some really, really good writing from some really good writers like Peter Edelman, Jim Hightower. I mean, this just goes on and on. You ought to visit the website, change-links.org, change-links.org. Check them out, will you please? Change-links.org. This is one of the few real community radical. This one's an eight-pager. Tabloids left. There aren't very many left. Please check it out. And if you want to subscribe, go ahead. I mean, it's certainly worth the subscription. It's not much. I don't know what it is. I don't have it here. But if you want to subscribe or make a contribution, whatever you want to do, change-links.org. Good little paper. And that is a dying breed. You know it as well as I do. These little independent papers. They used to be all over the country. I used to work for one. Well, two. Three. Three different ones here in Atlanta. From the Common Dreams staff. Sizzling heat, storms, wildfires, quote, this is just the beginning, end quote. That's what Jeff Masters warns. He's the director of meteorology at the Weather Underground. No, not that Weather Underground. But he's describing what life with the impacts of climate change will look like. And his message follows a week in which 2,000 heat records were matched or broken. And the month of June, in which over 3,200 heat records were matched or broken. Yet during that time, with little exception, there was no mention of climate change during weather broadcasts in which viewers were told to expect little relief from steamy temperatures. Have you noticed that? I watch the Weather Channel, and they just don't talk about it. I watch the local weather, just don't talk about it. I watch some of the cable newscasts, they just don't talk about it. He was on Democracy Now! Today, and Jeff Masters said, quote, I think it's important for the public to hear that what we're seeing now is the future. We're going to be seeing a lot more weather like this, a lot more impacts like we're seeing from this series of heat waves, fires, and storms, and we better prepare for it. We better educate people as to what's going on, give the best science that's out there on what climate change is doing and where it's likely to head. I think we're missing a big opportunity here. Or our television meteorologists are, an opportunity to educate and tell the population what is likely to happen. This is just the beginning, this kind of summer weather we're having. End quote. Educate the public? Television? What? What was Jeff Masters, bless his heart, smoking before he went on Democracy Now? I mean, oh yeah, but I agree with Jeff. I believe Jeff, my man. But educate the public? Give the best science that's available on what climate change is doing and where we're heading? This has been going on for 30 years. Did you read in the New York Times today about one of the original climatologists who 30 years ago realized from doing ice core samples, realized OMFG! What was going on? And watching glaciers melt. I've got a report here from Der Spiegel, the German and the English language version of Der Spiegel online about what's happening in the Bavarian Alps. Nobody's paying attention. Jeff, educate the public? This public? Are you serious? These sons of bitches don't even believe in evolution. I mean, you have a very, very distinct minority of people in this country who don't accept the biblical horse hockey about how the whole planet... Oh, never mind. Never mind. Jonathan Overpeck, professor of geosciences and atmospheric sciences, University of Arizona, said, quote, "This is what global warming looks like at the regional or personal level. The extra heat increases the odds or worse of worse heat waves, drought, storms, and fire. This is certainly what I and many other climate scientists have been warning about." You know the attitude of the Americans about this? Listen. Ball it up, throw it in the trash.
You can brighten up their day, keep the facts out of their way. Just simplify the complex, repeat, repeat, repeat. Propaganda, propaganda. If you need to change the subject, it's a dandy. If you want to wag the dog, it's like falling off a log. It's so easy with propaganda. The folks at beach is never sandy. You can convert into lies what they seen with their own eyes. It's amazing.
I'm gonna leave the city. He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy. I'm gonna leave
the city. Got to 25 before the hour. We're off tomorrow night. We'll be doing a best of, right, Kathy? So we can take Molly to wave her flag and watch the fireworks, something. And tomorrow night is church night. So we're doing kind of a modified church night tonight at the request of the crew of... Radicals in the Malloy chat room. You can get into that room if you want to. Just go to MikeMalloy.com and tell you how to get there. Daniel Politi writing at Slate regarding global warming. He says, of course, there are skeptics who say history is full of examples of extreme weather. And this is just Mother Nature being a Mother Nature. But, of course, the vast majority of mainstream climate scientists disagree with that. I started out to say about the guy, it's on the New York Times today on the front page. A man's been working on this forever, and now he has some serious health issues. And he literally is concerned that he's going to die before there is definitive proof. Of course, what he doesn't understand, the right-wingers, there's no proof. When the planet is on goddamn fire, these half-wits will still not believe it, or they'll think it's Jesus returning or some such nonsense. But the scientist, and I don't have the article right in front of me, but he's deeply concerned that the science that he and his fellow climatologists have been working on for the past 30 years is starting to, there's no urgency. No urgency. In an editorial, the LA Times pointedly notes, according to Daniel Politi at Slate, pointedly notes that global warming, quote, isn't just about polar bears anymore, end quote. The paper adds that the public needs to pay attention to recent reports that show the reality of climate change. And even though skeptics have long said that warnings are nothing but fear-mongering, you know, it's just those goddamn liberals. The truth is that the climatologists should be taken more seriously now, considering emerging patterns that closely fit earlier forecasts. I mean, everything that's going on right now with global weather patterns and melting glaciers and rising sea levels and fires and air pollution, this is not just happening this week or this month with no warning. This is not like an asteroid that all of a sudden shows up and, we're all going to die. This is not like that. The scientists have been trying and trying repeatedly to let people know for the past 3 decades, if not longer. But the right-wing noise machine in this country is so goddamn loud and so capitalist, corporatist-controlled and so ignorant and so Jesus-oriented and so sick and degenerate that it has drowned out the science. So here we are. And you, you right-wing religious bastards out there in Colorado Springs, what do you think? Is this because you haven't kept the faith? What is this? Where's Jerry Fall? He's dead. Where's Pat Robertson blaming it on the gay folk? You sick thugs. As Daniel Politi points out, though, at Slate, even as climate change becomes more obvious, it's no longer seen as a top environmental problem. Only 18% of people in the U.S. consider global climate change the top environmental concern. In 2007, it was 33%. Now it's down to 18. Huh? That's according to the Washington Post. 2007, that was the year in which a major UN report on climate change, as well as Al Gore's documentary, made headlines. And now? 29% of Americans say water and air pollution is the most important issue, according to the Washington Post. Still, that doesn't mean Americans don't think it's important, global climate change. 78% of those polled say it will become a serious problem if nothing is done to address the issue, and it may be that the public has their priorities in order. After all, in a recent Project Syndicate column published in Slate, Bjorn Lomborg wrote that air and water pollution is a far more serious problem than global warming. Of course it is. Yeah. It's really astonishing, isn't it? And according to Der Spiegel Online, the Bavarian Alps are known for their stunning vistas and winter sports opportunities, but the view from some summits could change drastically in the next 20 years due to climate change. The Bavarian environmental minister, Marcel Huber, warned yesterday. Temperatures in the area have increased by some 2 degrees Celsius, almost 4 degrees Fahrenheit, in the last 1.5 centuries, nearly double the world average. 4 of the region's 5 glaciers could melt entirely in the next 20 to 30 years. That may not be in my lifetime, but for a lot of you who are listening, who are in your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, good God! Well, wait, I guess that would include me, wouldn't it? Since 1820, the total area of Bavarian glaciers has dropped from 4 square kilometers, 1.6 square miles, to 0.3 square miles. 5 glaciers, including 3 mini-glaciers, make up the area involved here. But according to Mr. Huber, with temperatures expected to go up between 3 and 6 degrees Celsius in the next 90 years, the glaciers are not likely to survive. Huber said, quote, "This is a dimension that one can hardly imagine," end quote. Mr. Huber, the Bavarian environmental minister, announced that Bavaria would spend more than $1.3 billion on implementing climate protection and the country's planned nuclear energy phase-out. The 4-point plan being put forward by Bavaria includes new policies, adaptations, research, and individual measures to address climate change. He says the federal government shouldn't focus on its coasts alone. The Alps are also a place that needs more financial commitments. But I don't think that Minister Huber is working under the misapprehension that global climate change can be arrested in Bavaria while it continues apace in the rest of the world. I don't think he's saying that. I'm not sure what he's saying. The Germans, not the Nazis, not the German people in the 30s that had apparently had Dick Cheney as the operator behind the scenes of the Nazi high command. Cheney, who is a vampire, who is soulless, who lives on through centuries, was obviously the one behind Nazism. But the German people are known to be very scientific, very insightful, very willing to face truths. Not the Nazis, not the German people in the 30s when they were deeply influenced by Herr Cheney, who had climbed out of his coffin and taken over the German government. But they must be aware, mustn't they, that global climate change is going to depend on crisis intervention by the European Union, China, India, the United States, Brazil. It's hard sometimes to imagine, when you stop and think of the people around the globe who are not industrialized democracies, who are not focused on gimme, gimme, get, where's the new one? This one's 6 months old. More. They're not focused on that at all. I'm talking about so-called indigenous people. And that term to me has always been a little bit of a put down, but let's use it. Indigenous people or original people. Or people who live so close to nature that the industrialized societies kind of treat them as monkeys in a zoo. You know, the people who still live in the Brazilian rainforest, the huge families of Aboriginal people in Australia, they're not the Dutch East Indies anymore, but you know that part, the Malaysia. That part of the world, some of the tribal peoples in southern and northern India, Tibetans, just on and on, who literally have nothing to do with the fact that the planet is being boiled alive. And they have to die right along with us. They have to choke to death, and their children, and their children's children, right along with ours. Isn't that, I don't know what, unfair?
One objective I've got in view is to keep a hold of freedom for me and you. That's why I'm marching. Yes, I'm marching. Marching down freedom.
Before the hour,
who made me judge and judge.
Robert sent me a link to an article that was broadcast on National Public Radio January 26, 2009, 3.5 years ago. And let me quote some of it to you. Climate change is essentially irreversible, according to a sobering new scientific study. As carbon dioxide emissions continue to rise, the world will experience more and more long-term environmental disruption. The damage will persist even when and if emissions are brought under control, says study author Susan Solomon, who is among the world's top climate scientists. Solomon says, quote, we're used to thinking about pollution problems as things that we can fix. Smog, we just cut back and everything will get better. Or haze, you know, it'll go away fairly quickly, end quote. That's the case for some of the gases that contribute to climate change, such as methane and nitrous oxide. But as Solomon and colleagues suggest in a new study 3.5 years ago, published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, it is not true for the most abundant greenhouse carbon dioxide. Turning off the carbon dioxide emissions won't stop global warming. Solomon says, quote, people have imagined that if we stopped emitting carbon dioxide, that the climate would go back to normal in 100 years or 200 years. What we're showing here is that's not right. It's essentially an irreversible change that will last for more than 1,000 years, end quote. And she says that's because the oceans are currently soaking up a lot of the planet's excess heat and a lot of the carbon dioxide put into the air. The carbon dioxide and heat will eventually start coming out of the ocean, and that will take place for many hundreds of years to come. Solomon is a scientist with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Her new study, 3.5 years ago, looked at the consequences of this long-term effect in terms of sea level rise and drought. She said, if we continue with business as usual for even a few more decades, those emissions could be enough to create permanent dust bowl conditions in the U.S. Southwest and around the Mediterranean. She added, the sea level rise is a much slower thing, so it will take a long time to happen, but we will lock into it based on the peak level of carbon dioxide we reach in this century, end quote. She also said that the idea that changes will be irreversible has consequences for how we should deal with climate change. She said the global thermostat can't be turned down quickly once it's been turned up. So scientists say we need to proceed with more caution right now. Michael Oppenheimer of Princeton said, quote, these are all changes that are starting to happen in at least a minor way already. So the question becomes, where do we stop it? When does all this become dangerous? End quote. The answer, he says, is sooner rather than later. Scientists have been trying to advise politicians about finding an acceptable level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. The new study suggests that it's even more important to aim low. If we overshoot, the damage can't be easily undone. Oppenheimer feels more urgency than ever to deal with climate change, but he says that in the end, setting acceptable limits for carbon dioxide is a judgment call. He says, quote, that's really a political decision because there's more at issue than just the science. It's the issue of what the science says, plus what's feasible policy, plus what's reasonable economically to do, end quote. But going back to Susan Solomon, she says, despite this grim prognosis, she said, this is not the time to declare the problem hopeless and give up. She says, I guess if it's irreversible, to me it seems all the more reason you might want to do something about it, because committing to something that you can't back out of seems to me like a step that you'd want to take even more carefully than something you thought you couldn't reverse, end quote. So I think the answer of what these scientists are trying to say, that the conditions that we have created since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution cannot be reversed, but they can be maintained at a certain level of increase because the carbon emissions are going to increase. If we turned off every machine on Earth that emitted carbon dioxide, it would still continue. We've reached that point. Part of the point is overpopulation of the planet. But learning how to to maintain the rate of increase, which we're not doing right now, we're doing nothing of the sort. We are increasing the rate of increase, if that makes any sense. But trying to maintain the rate of increase of global temperature how many times am I going to say increase in the same sentence, Kathy? In global climate change. If we can maintain the rate of increase long enough for science to come up with, and the public to accept what science comes up with, acceptable, rational means of energy, energy generation that is not nuclear or non-renewable, then we might have a chance. Now, when I say we, I'm not talking about you and me. We're going to be dead. You and I will be dead before this really slams home to our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren. So, and this is what the 1%, this is what they do. Why should they give a goddamn? They're not going to be here. But maybe you do care. I mean, I care. I have an 8-year-old. Well, she's 2 weeks away from being 8. And I have grandchildren. And I have friends who have grandchildren. And I think, Jesus Christ, what? If there was any way that we could make decisions today, and there are, I mean, we can do this. But these goddamn right-wing religious nutballs and these political half-wits and the climate change deniers and the Glenn Beck suckers and all the rest of these people, for some reason, have the upper hand with their insanity. So you and I don't know. What do? I don't know. I get emails from people who say, you just bitch a lot, but you don't have any solutions. That's right.
This is a referral.
Producer of the Shannon Moore Show in Alaska, Kelly Walters, bless his heart. He's the one that has sent us smoked fish. Ugh. Anyway, Kelly Walters, the producer of the Shannon Moore Show, writes, I grew up in Colorado Springs. It was conservative before all the loony religious crazies moved in. Colorado Springs resident Douglas Bruce, who authored the Taxpayer's Bill of Rights, just got out of jail for tax evasion. And he sends me, Kelly sends me a link to Denver Post article. And it says, former Colorado legislator Douglas Bruce was complaining about the food, the deplorable living conditions, and the ridiculous rules in prison. Well, the Denver City Jail. He was sentenced to 180 days in the clink for using his charity to avoid income taxes. When this guy talks about tax evasion, he's not kidding. But he was released early for good behavior. Last Thursday, he came out of the Denver City Jail saying his spirit had not been broken behind bars. He said, I'm stronger than when I went in because I rose above the insanity of the whole process. He vowed to sue the lockup after he wins his appeal for his tax evasion conviction. Now, listen to this thug. He says, quote, they served refrigerated rolls at least twice a day. I've never seen that. He said he lost 47 pounds during 104 days in jail. Well, of course, you know, he was some Rush Limbaugh pig. They served what they called gravy, which I considered to look and taste like sewage. They didn't serve coffee. All they served was chicory, which is a boiled root. He was placed in solitary confinement for the first 4 days of his sentence. He said jail staff later admitted that was unnecessary and placed him in a low-security housing block. Blah, 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 blah. Mr. Bruce said the food was inedible. He said he survived on low-fat milk and oranges. He said inmates were overcharged for use of phones, and the commissary food was five times market price. He said the jail's plumbing and heating were defective and would generate multiple code violations if the building was inspected. Blah, 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 blah. What else did he bitch about? Jail spokesman Frank Gale said the jail's heating and plumbing systems are only 2 years old. Gale said Bruce was treated no differently from any other inmate. The jail spokesman said, quote, for him it was probably culture shock. He had it about as easy as it gets in our facility. He probably just didn't like being in jail, end quote. Now, this is the guy who had, well, he's best known as the author of the tax-limiting Taxpayers' Bill of Rights that was adopted state, well, first by the city of Colorado Springs and then statewide in Colorado. He was an El Paso County Commissioner and served 1 year in the State House of Representatives in Colorado. He was arrested April last year on charges of a tax evasion, filing false tax returns, and failing to file returns. Prosecutors said he transferred millions of dollars of income to his nonprofit Active Citizens Together, avoiding income taxes, and then used that money to fund political activities. he has the next 6 years to serve on probation. He said he planned on his first day of freedom to treat five friends who supported him during his jail stay with a dinner at a Denver steakhouse. So the guy that originally came up with the so-called Taxpayers' Bill of Rights is a convicted thug, criminal, kind of like Daryl Issa, although Issa was never... Was he convicted? I'm not sure. But what the charges were, I don't know. Maybe null processed or something. Nunc for tunc. Maybe the charges against ISA. I don't even know. Nunc for tunc means, I think it's a legal term that means not for now. They just kind of hang in the background for the rest of your life. I don't know. ISA's just a thug. But here's the guy who came up with the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, who the end result of which is the fact that huge swaths of Colorado have been turned into white ash because there was no tax money to involve the state in prevention to begin with and firefighting once these blazes began. And they have a new term for them now. They call them superfires. Superfire. Is that like Superfly? Superfire. Did you have a fire? No, we had a super fire. So he goes to have a steak now that he's out of jail. And he will spend his money. I'm sure the money that he siphoned. I don't know how thugs like this collect these huge amounts of money, but they do. They're like the preachers, the televangelists. They just suck whatever they can get out of the sheep, the brain dead people who sit in front of a television set, unemployed, no way to send their kids to a decent public university, nothing. They have the Bible in one hand and this garbage on television, and they send money in. No, you can't eat tonight, Mary Lou. I got to send in money to the preacher because he's going to pray just for us. Said he would. He's going to send me a prayer cloth. Pretty astonishing. But, you know, now that he's out of prison, you know, out of jail, you know what this guy will do? You know this as well as I do. As a matter of fact, in the article in Denver Post, somebody asked him if he was finished with politics. He said, I've never been out of politics. he'll probably run for some office in, might be a county office or statewide office, and he'll get elected. He'll get elected. Because these religious fanatics, you know, no matter how much death and destruction they cause, no matter how much turmoil and catastrophe they're responsible for, it doesn't make any difference, these religious fanatics, because they look at each other and they bob their heads up and down and say, yeah, well, Jesus will forgive me. Amen. Because, you know, I prayed last night. And you know what?
What?
He forgave me last night.
Did?
Yes, he did.
How do you know?
He told me. Oh, you're forgiven.
Yes.
Well, you can start all over again.
Yes,
I can start just being a rotten son of a bitch all over again. You know what?
What?
When I'm done being a rotten son of a bitch round 27, he'll still forgive me.
He will?
Yes. That's what he does. He forgives.
No matter what you do?
No matter what I do.
You mean Hitler has been forgiven?
Of course.
You mean Breitbart?
Well,
But you're going to be forgiven.
Yes. This is what they do. This is what they do. And they have their great getting up morning, you know, where no matter what they do, no matter what they do, I'm going to see the Lord. You know, the Mormons believe you can lie for the Lord. That's right. If your ultimate goal is to do the Lord's will, you can lie your ass off, and it doesn't matter. We'll be right back.
Making plans to meet him somewhere along. But love is no longer there. The woman of his heart no longer cares. It's best to call it quits and go your separate way. Playing that cheating game.
Being reported that traces, this is from the Reuters news agency, traces of the poisonous element polonium have been found in the belongings of the late Palestinian President Yasser Arafat. That's according to a Swiss institute. And a television report said his widow had demanded his body be exhumed for further tests. Arafat died at a hospital in France in 2004 after a sudden illness which baffled doctors. Many Palestinians have long suspected he was poisoned. According to Reuters, a spokesman for the Institute of Radiophysics in Lausanne, Switzerland, told Reuters today it had found, quote, surprisingly, end quote, high levels of polonium-210 in Arafat's belongings. The Qatar-based Al Jazeera satellite channel said the institute in Switzerland had tested Arafat's personal effects that had been given to them by his widow. The documentary said they showed that his clothes, toothbrush, and keffiyeh headscarf contained abnormal levels of polonium, a rare, highly radioactive element. director of the Institute in Switzerland, said in the documentary, quote, I can confirm to you that we measured an unexpected elevated amount of unsupported polonium-210 in the belongings of Mr. Arafat that contained stains of biological fluids. The spokesman said the only way to confirm the findings would be to exhume Arafat's body to test it for polonium-210. Now, polonium was found to have caused the death of former Russian spy Alexander Litvinenko in London in 2006, and it was assumed he was deliberately poisoned. Arafat's widow, Sua, said she would ask for Arafat's body to be exhumed. It's buried in the West Bank town of Ramallah. Well, like I say, just FYI, if he was poisoned, who do you think did it? Would it have been the CIA or Mossad? Or both? Huh? There's a little quiz for you. Polonium, huh? I'll be darned. Further proof that Republicans love veterans. Love them as long as they're dead. Republicans hate veterans who come back all PTSD'd or limbs missing and, oh, God, I have to look at them in a parade, right? Republicans hate that. They love to have their veterans dead. Joe Walsh, the Republican from Illinois, isn't he the one that hollered out, "You lie!" Or no, that guy was from South Carolina. Joe Walsh is the one who won't pay his child support. That's right. He has gone after his Democratic opponent, Tammy Duckworth. Now, it doesn't make any difference what you think of Tammy Duckworth, I don't think, her politics. She is a Democrat. She's running against him. But regardless of that, she is a woman who lost both her legs as a helicopter pilot in Iraq. And Walsh says she's talking about her military career too much. Walsh suggested that Duckworth was not a true hero. Walsh said at a town hall meeting on Sunday that unlike Duckworth, John McCain rarely spoke about his military service during the two. Well, there you go. Walsh said, that's what's so noble about our heroes. Now, I'm not running against a woman who, I mean, my God, that's all she talks about. It's a video posted at thinkprogress.org. Our true heroes is the last thing in the world they talk about. Our true heroes, the men and women who served us, is the last thing in the world they talk about. That's why we're so indebted and in awe of what they've done, end quote. Tammy Duckworth does not call herself a hero. I don't think any military person ever, no matter even if they get the Congressional Medal of Honor, I don't think they refer themselves as heroes. As a matter of fact, they deny the charge. A spokeswoman for Tammy Duckworth said Joe Walsh's comments were insulting to all the veterans. Quote, Congressman Walsh's comments insult those who sacrificed to make this country free. Tammy is proud of her over 20 years of service with the Army and her family's legacy of fighting for this country. We can't recognize our servicemen and women enough and ask that we keep them in our thoughts during this holiday week. Now, Walsh, of course, is a tea bag favorite. He's a real scum. He's just filthy scum. Filthy scum. Duckworth served in the National Guard. She flew combat missions in Iraq. Her helicopter was hit by RPG in 2004. She lost both of her legs. And again, however you factor in her military experience and the war in Iraq and on and on and on, the fact that Joe Walsh is a cowardly Republican kind of mitigates everything, doesn't it?
It's my
25 before the hour. So, Kim, regarding Walsh, regarding this piece of human waste, Joe Walsh, Kim writes to me and says, Mike, I wonder if these right-wingers ever get tired of being stupid. The latest rant by Joe Walsh exhibits the sheer stupidity he and his fellow right-wingers continue to spew every day. He never gets tired of talking crap about Tammy Duckworth these days. He continually talks about her and her war record and how she puts her experience in Iraq to good use here while working with our veterans and their issues they suffer from on a regular basis. This man is such an effing loser that he couldn't hold a candle to her with respect to being a true American. He certainly can't be considered a role model when it comes to one of the Republicans' talking points, like take care of your personal responsibilities. He's probably mad that she came home from Iraq anyway. After all, Republicans like dead soldiers. His idea of a true American who served his country would be that freak in Florida, Alan West. Kim, by the way, a quote from Woody Allen. We stand today at a crossroads. One path leads to despair and utter hopelessness. The other leads to total extinction. Let us hope we have the wisdom to make the right choice. Oh, God. Woody Allen. I mean, to me, in my little world, he's my soul brother. Oh, my God. His overriding angst about everything. Sheila Samples at Op-Ed News sent me this. She writes, in the same week that record June heat blanketed the country, a massive summer storm wreaked havoc from Indiana to Washington, and the biggest fire in Colorado's history continued to burn almost out of control. President Obama doubled down in his support for the energy that is causing this deepening climate change spiral. Last week, the Obama administration approved the first portion of the Keystone XL tar sands pipeline. It also gave away 720 million tons of publicly owned coal to Peabody Energy for virtually nothing. And the Obama administration promised to lease more Arctic offshore areas for oil drilling. Well, that's just in one goddamn week. Oh, but what about the Supreme Court, Mike? Okay, here's the first one. The Obama administration last Thursday finalized a 5-year plan for offshore drilling that focuses on development in explored areas of the Gulf of Mexico and the Arctic. To the chagrin of oil and gas companies who are hoping for more territory, we want everything. The first sale of leases under the Interior Department's 2012 to 2017 plan is set to take place this fall, with areas of the western Gulf of Mexico up for grabs. 11 more Gulf of Mexico sales are planned, as well as 3 auctions of leases in the Cook Inlet near Anchorage and the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas north of Alaska. The plan rules out lease sales in Atlantic waters, despite pressure from Virginia officials eager for oil and gas development off Virginia shores. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar described this plan as smart but aggressive, with planned auctions of waters around Alaska targeted to areas that have both big potential energy resources and small environmental and other conflicts. Big potential energy resources and small environmental conflicts. They're very small. Representative Doc Hastings, a Republican from the state of Washington, who's the head of the House Natural Resources Committee, said the plan offers, quote, a bleak future for American energy production because it keeps the East and West Coasts under lock and key. Oh, my God. Okay, now, on coal, the Obama administration's Bureau of Land Management auctioned a major tract of Wyoming coal to Peabody Energy at a bargain basement price of $1.10 per ton. The North Porcupine coal tract in the Powder River Basin went to the single bidder, Peabody subsidiary BPU Western Resources for $793 billion for 721 million tons. Or 793 million, I'm sorry, billion, come on, Mike. $793 million for 721 million tons. The sale, made under the provision of the Mineral Leasing Act of 1920, represents a massive fossil fuel subsidy based on the assumption that the use of coal benefits the American public. However, it is likely this coal is intended for the Asian market, where sub-bituminous coal fetches a much higher price. The non-competitive leasing program is under federal investigation.
Really?
Well, that'll be stopped. Moreover, the costs of the carbon pollution from mining and burning this coal were not taken into consideration. The 721 million short tons of sub-bituminous coal in the lease sale will generate approximately 1.1 billion metric tons of carbon dioxide when burned, with a modest estimated social cost of carbon at $65 per ton of CO2. The global warming impacts to society of this lease exceeds $70 billion, 90 times the price paid for the lease. More than 27,000 people had signed a Credo Action petition opposing the fire sale of Wyoming subprime carbon reserves. Doesn't matter. I've told you before, signing a petition. I don't want to be a jackass about this, but sign petitions until your goddamn hand bleeds. It doesn't mean anything. Let's all sign another petition where it concerns Bradley Manning. That worked, right? Let's sign petitions about blowing the tops off of mountains. That worked, right? Let's sign petitions about offshore drilling. Oh, that always works. Let's sign petitions about keeping the oil and gas companies out of the Arctic Ocean. Oh, yeah, where do I sign? Woohoo! This is the liberals' bane, as far as I'm concerned, to believe that signing a petition means anything. It doesn't. Stop it. If you want to do something, take the energy that is required to log on to your computer, get off your ass, go someplace with 30 million other Americans, and sit down. And don't move. Stop signing these goddamn petitions. Stop telling yourself that when you sign one, you have just done something positive. You have not. What you've done is convince yourself, oh, well, I did the good thing. I signed a petition. About what? Oh, I don't know. It's something about the environment. Sign a petition, my ass. As if there was some kind of response, positive, for the petition signers. Has there ever been? Oh, maybe. I don't know. Maybe down on a county level where the county was about to build a crematorium next to your kid's playground and all your neighbors got together and signed a petition. No crematorium! But we're not talking about that. And especially online petitions. For Christ's sake, stop it! Because it gives you a false sense that you've just done something. No, you haven't. And I don't care where the petition comes from. A lot of righteous websites on the line, online, okay, that put these damnable petitions up. And then all the liberals, like a bunch of damn sheep, you act like Republicans. Oh, where do I sign? Oh, there I sign. Okay. Petitions. And there's one more. I guess we'll pick it up on the other side of the break. One more. The third thing that the Obama administration did today. The Keystone XL pipeline bit. You thought that was over, right? Because what? You signed a petition. Huh? Right? You signed a petition. And didn't Obama kill the whole thing? No.
Listen to the radio.
Sheila Samples sent to me, the Keystone XL pipeline segment approved. It's from the Associated Press. U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in Tulsa has approved a segment of TransCanada Corporation's Keystone XL pipeline planned to run from Cushing, Oklahoma to Texas. Ross Adkins, Chief of Public Affairs for the Tulsa District, confirmed the decision Friday, just passed. If the overall project is approved by the president, snicker, snicker, the pipeline could eventually transport tar sands oil from Western Canada to refineries along the Texas Gulf Coast. TransCanada needs Army Corps approval, engineer approval for its wetlands and water crossing plans. There's wetlands and water crossing plans? What's that? Yeah, these oil companies take real cautious, conscientious care of wetlands and water crossings, right? The company awaits a similar decision from the Corps, Fort Worth, Texas district. The Obama administration shelved the project earlier this year, explaining that officials need more time to study alternate routes that would bypass certain environmentally sensitive areas in Nebraska, blah, blah, blah. Earlier this month, U.S. State Department announced that it would issue a final decision on the project early next year. Blah, 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 blah. Russ Girling, TransCanada's president and chief executive officer, has said by the time the final decision is made on the pipeline, quote, Keystone XL will be well into its fifth year of exhaustive and detailed studies, the most extensive review for a cross-border pipeline ever. The final review should focus solely on the realigned route that avoids the Nebraska sandhills. The rest of the Keystone XL route remains the same. The geology of the route remains the same. The environmental conditions remain the same. Nothing else has changed since the final environmental impact statement was approved. The pipeline has drawn fierce opposition from environmental groups who say the $5.3 billion pipeline is a natural disaster waiting to happen when a section leaks and threatens the drinking water supply for millions of Americans. You know it's going to happen, Truth Seeker. So, just a little update there from Sheila Samples on how the... in the same week that record heat blanketed the country, a massive summer storm wreaked havoc from Indiana to Washington, and the biggest fire in Colorado's history continues to burn. Obama doubled down in his support for the energy that is causing this deepening climate change spiral. Okay, well, you know, Mr. Obama can't be everything. He's the hope and change president. He damn sure can't do that and be the environmental president. I mean, busy, busy, busy. From Michael in Roswell, New Mexico, regarding the, what I will now refer to as the obvious, it isn't, the obvious murder of Yasser Arafat. Michael writes, I suspected the polonium-210 might have been involved in Arafat's death, in part because he was in good health before suddenly being taken ill, and his symptoms generally agreed with polonium poisoning, i.e. digestive tract problems. What's important in the figure cited, you know, from the examination of his personal belongings, what's important is that the half-life of polonium-210 is something like 138 days. So, after 8 years, he died 8 years ago, after 8 years, the level of radioactivity found in his bodily fluids today would be 0.5 to the 21st power, or 0.000477, the amount it was when introduced, if the sample was fresh. 477, tens, hundred thousand, tens of thousands, hundred thousands, millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions. Billions. 477 billionths of the amount it was when introduced. And the levels found in the recent tests were still as high as 15 or 20 times the background level. Dear God! They must have given him 6 pounds of it! Michael continues, I say that's pretty strong evidence of polonium poisoning. As for it being the CIA or Mossad... is there a substantive difference when it comes to Israel-U.S. interests? Quote, quote. Michael and Roswell. Yeah, 477 billionths of the amount it was when introduced, if the sample was fresh. But the levels found were still as high as 15 or 20 times the background level. Well, maybe he just walked into a polonium machine and, you know, just fell down and just got tons of this stuff or ounces of this stuff all over him and said to his wife, Sue, hey, look at this. What the hell's this? Oh, nothing, Arafat. It's just dust. Oh, dust. Well, here, let me stick some at the bottom of my feet. Let me put some over here in my pants pockets. I'll put some up here in my breast pocket and a little bit here under my keffiyeh and some down here in my armpit. I like dust. I say it was Israel. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. here's something for you. This is the Malloy program. We're going to open up the lines if you want to call in. The number here is 877-996-2556. This is from moveon.org. I'm on their mailing list. Below is an email from Lyndia Story, a MoveOn member who created a petition to sign, a petition on signon.org that's growing rapidly. Dear MoveOn member, now see, here's the thing. What this woman writes about is shocking and stunning and should get our attention. But what is suggested to fight this is more of the utter futility of signing petitions, especially online petitions. But here it says, Dear MoveOn member, according to the U.S. Navy's own estimates, the use of high-frequency underwater sound for testing in Hawaii off the California and Atlantic coast and in the Gulf of Mexico will deafen 15,900 whales and dolphins and kill 1,800 more over the next 5 years. Whales and dolphins depend on sound to navigate and live. The Navy is required to include comments from the public on their environmental impact statement. So your signature and comment on my signon.org petition could help stop the stable program and save the lives of these ocean creatures. My petition says, quote, stop the killing of 1,800 whales and dolphins and the deafening of 15,900 more by ceasing the operation of the Navy's underwater sound system in the Hawaiian Islands, the California and Atlantic coast, and the Gulf of Mexico. Will you sign the petition? Click here to add your name and then pass it along to your friends. Thanks for your help. P.S. The comments must be in by July 10th, 2012. So please sign my petition today. If you want to sign the petition, go to moveon.org. And you will find it someplace there. But let me ask you something. With all due respect, no, I hate the word due. With all respect to Lyndia Story, who created the petition, is there any proof whatsoever, anywhere, anytime, since the, I don't know, pick a number, the past 10 years, that signing an online petition that asked the U.S. military security state to stop testing its weaponry because the tests are going to kill thousands of sea creatures who are mammals and deafen them, which essentially kills them. Is there any proof that any petition has stopped the military-industrial complex in this country from going ahead with this business? Can anyone send me anything that I can grab hold of and say, aha, here's something? Can you? What about all the petitions to stop the slaughter of baby seals? Those little cute white baby seals who deserve a chance to live or not. Who knows? Has that stopped? Has any petition that was designed to stop the murder, disfigurement, deformation, or extinction of a creature or creatures by oil companies, U.S. military, coal companies. How many petitions have been signed by the residents of Appalachia asking, please, coal company, don't blow the top off the mountain and end my life? How many of those have worked? Somebody, someplace. Can you send me anything that I can get my fingernails in and say, aha, aha, here's one. Thank God. I'll wait. But signing a petition, if it will make you feel better, sign it. And again, this is not any disrespect to Lyndia Story, the MoveOn member who created the petition at signon.org. If you think it will make a difference, go sign it. I cannot tell you how many petitions I have signed. Online petitions. 30, 50, 100. I have no idea. But I can tell you that in each and every single instance, the petition I was signing, the protest I was making by adding my name to the list, and in many instances I'd add a comment, but I can tell you that the result was zero, zilch, nada, nothing, feh, no, nothing, nowhere. Whatever I was signing against continued. Until it finally, you know, started to occur to me, you know, this is stupid, Mike. This is just ridiculous. If you really want to do something, reference Mario Savio's Sproul Hall Steps statement of 1964. If you really want to do something, then you have to put yourself into the gears and the wheels of the machine in order to stop it. Because finally, the operation of the machine becomes so odious, so criminal, so filthy. And Mario Savio hadn't even heard the term global warming. Nothing. There, nothing. So, no petitions. Thank you very much. Just a couple more things here, and then to your phone calls. North Carolina's Republican-controlled legislature voted yesterday, last night, to override Democratic Governor Bev Perdue's veto of a state budget that strips money from Planned Parenthood. She says, no, we're not going to take it away. The good men of the Republican Party overrode her veto and moved to defund Planned Parenthood. Last year they tried this, but a judge blocked the provision, arguing that a state can't single out a particular health provider. So this time around, the Republican swine found a way to sidestep legal challenges by not specifically naming Planned Parenthood in the budget. Instead, the bill prevents the state's Health and Human Services Department from contracting with any so-called private provider of family planning services, effectively but not explicitly singling out Planned Parenthood. Now, Planned Parenthood of Central North Carolina, one of the state's two Planned Parenthood providers, estimates that it will lose $200,000 as a result of the new budget because no state money is used for abortion services anyway. The funding cuts will affect the clinic's ability to provide affordable birth control, cancer screenings, pap smears, and other services for low-income women in the state of North Carolina. A spokesperson for Planned Parenthood of North Carolina told the Huffington Post, quote, if we aren't able to figure something out and replace this funding, this will affect the price and availability of services and prescription drugs for patients. We won't be able to provide the walk-in care we currently provide. These filthy sons of bitches, how many times do they have to be told? Planned Parenthood of North Carolina takes no money from the state or the federal government for abortions. You see, it's not about abortion. It's about women controlling their own bodies. For Christ's sake, will you finally get that through your heads?
The Mike Malloy Show, because each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
Past the hour. So anyway, back to this North Carolina thing before we come to your calls. The new budget bill in North Carolina that the legislature there, all the Republican men, overrode or put into effect by overriding the Democratic woman governor, Bev Perdue's, veto of this budget. The new budget redirects $343,000 in state family planning funding from private family planning providers to county health departments effective 4 days ago. Because private providers, namely Planned Parenthood, also offer abortions not paid for with public money of any sort. But they don't care. The spokeswoman for Planned Parenthood in North Carolina, Paige Johnson, said it was unclear whether the budget's 2011 injunction against the defunding provisions would apply to the new budget now that it doesn't specifically name Planned Parenthood. Ms. Johnson said, "We're looking at all legal options." So I just wonder if the time will come. And I may be totally out of touch again. I usually am with the majority opinion in this country. No matter what the majority opinion might be, I usually find myself on the little tiny short end of the stick. And that's okay. That's, matter of fact, it's better than okay. But I just wonder if the time will come when women of this country will do something equivalent to what the women were doing, the so-called suffragettes. Even their political activity was minimized and demeaned. Suffragettes. Sounds like a Paul McCartney line. Suffragettes. Add the E-T-T-E-S on the end there. You know, the girls. I wonder if modern women will decide that they've had enough and take to the streets by the tent. Oh, never mind. Jesus Christ, what am I saying? I know there are women who work like hell against this stuff, but the idea of getting millions of people in the street, I don't know why I keep coming back to that. I guess because to me it's the only effective way to end this movement of this machine. I'm serious. Come on. What are you going to do? Sign another petition? But if the women in North Carolina do not like the fact now that their sisters, who cannot afford the kind of care that so-called middle-class women used to be able to afford, and in some instances still can, and if the middle-class women can identify with their poorer sisters who cannot afford pap smears and mammograms and birth control. If that could happen, then perhaps middle-class women in North Carolina would take to the streets and say, enough of this goddamn war on us. We've had enough. In the meantime, the female governor of North Carolina continues to try again to stop this ugly male-dominated legislature, Republican male-dominated legislature, from saying to poor women, to hell with you. You are disposable. And the part that just, I don't know, this is the part where I tend to feel that violence gene inside of me start to wake up and reach around trying to find grenades and flamethrowers and RPGs. It's the part that they pass this kind of a budget and they put this kind of wording into it, even though Planned Parenthood does not and never has, to my knowledge, they certainly do not now, use state money or federal money because they are prohibited from doing so already for abortions. So if they try to tell you this is about stopping abortion, they are goddamn liars. But then they're Republicans, so of course they are. This is to say to women who have already been rendered even more powerless because of Bush Obama economic policies and the banksters and the thieves and life suckers who have sucked everything out of this country have already put these women in a terrible position. And now the white males in the North Carolina legislature comes along and kicks them in the goddamn stomach. And when they gasp for breath, the white male Republican legislatures help them up and then kick them again.
Silence is failing me. No, no, don't do that. Oh, don't do that. It takes a lifetime to learn what's been lost. Why are we all
before the hour, quick email here from Anonymous. Mike, Obama wants to be reelected. The Keystone Pipeline will go through, and that's underlined. Preaching to the choir, I know. However, what people are not thinking about is the injustice in the fact that the crappy oil will be refined in Texas, Louisiana, and or Mississippi. The refineries are working at max capacity right now, and to my knowledge, and then in parentheses, I'm in the oil and gas business, forgive me, please. To my knowledge, no refineries are expanding their capacity capabilities. This toxic sludge will probably be refined in Mississippi. I can't go into details. And will add immense carbon emissions, even with so-called pollution control devices in place. After refining, on to the tankers headed for China. Think about the route these massive tankers will take. Multiple disasters waiting to happen. And the request to leave the person's name unspoken. Thanks for the email. Mississippi. You know, this is why the woman who does the commercials, or not the commercials, but the institutional ads for the American Petroleum Institute is so infuriating when she stands there in her sleek, chic black suit and two-inch pumps and informs all of us that the tar sands oil, although she's not saying it anymore, somebody grabbed the script and said, no, for God's sake, don't say that. But when she was informing us that all of this oil is going to reduce America's dependence on so-called foreign oil, of course, I guess they didn't tell her in the script that Canada is not one of the states in the United States. If it's coming from Canada, it is foreign! Jesus Christ, these people are stupid. No. No, they're not. I'm sorry. They know we are! But to suggest that this not foreign sludge from Canada is going to somehow benefit Americans is such a filthy lie. It can do nothing but harm us. That's all it can do. If it goes to China, we'll be breathing it. No offense to Canada. I'm not, you know, I mean, I'm not. I'm not jumping on Canadians at all any more than those of us in this country who look at this stuff and go, oh my God. In our country, the country that we stole, you know, the people who are now Canadians also stole their country. We stole ours. The Australians stole theirs. I mean, we just go on and on, but I digress. Anyway, thanks for writing, person in the oil business. Sally is in Santa Fe, listening on KTRC. Hello, Sally.
Hello, Mike. Yeah, it's great to talk to you. I have to tell you real quick that my son, when he was 17, I think it was 06, was your last caller on your teenage call-in show?
Oh, yeah.
Way back when.
Yeah, way back when.
I thought you'd appreciate knowing it's a family tradition now. We're both calling in.
Well,
anyway,
thank you.
You're welcome. Hey, I had a thought today, and I wanted to share it with you. And it was that since the ultra-rich are on another planet in their head, I think they need very expensive belongings. And why don't we make these weird belongings that they seem to think that they need and sell it to them and take our money back? Doesn't that sound like a good idea?
Yeah, but ultimately we lose because the toys that the ultra-rich insist upon are toys that are only destructive to everything, the air, the earth, the water, ultimately the people who make these toys. So I'm sorry, I'm going to have to disagree with you, Sally.
Oh, well, I'll just have to keep thinking.
Although I get the point. I mean, it's other than the fact that the ultra-rich love things that are toxic to everybody else. Other than that point, it's a good idea.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. But I'll have to just get smarter then for you and call back another time.
No, just get like me and be more devious. You know,
okay.
try to come up with... But really, there's only one solution here, and that's when enough people in this country come to the self-realization. No leaders, nobody telling them, no polemicists, no theoreticians, just people somehow come to the same realization that Mario Savio had when he made his speech, that the machine, the operation of the machine, can become so destructive, so odious, that it has to be stopped.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah, but there can't be, and I think this is the main lesson that I got from Occupy was a lesson that I thought I learned back during the anti-nuke movement, when decisions were made by consensus. There were no real leaders who told people what to do. But that was back in the late 70s, and I had completely forgotten that until the Occupy movement, where it was made very clear once again that a movement to truly be effective cannot be a movement with leaders. It just can't. It has to be a kind of a simultaneous spontaneity that comes from the people, where people by the hundreds of thousands, I would hope millions, come to the realization, my God, it's not working. We have to stop it. So that's the only thing I can think of, Sally. If you come
I'm
up with something better, let me know.
I'll try. I'm all for what you're saying.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye now.
All right, Sally. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you checking in. Dave is in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm very pleased to talk to you today. How's the weather out there, I was wondering?
Awful. The air is so thick you cannot breathe it. We have code reds. We have... it's just insane.
Oh, that's so sad. I'm so sorry to hear that. I'm over here in Portland, and we're having just, like, the most gorgeous day. Like, 65 degrees and sunny, and just... We had the most beautiful evening. We had a beautiful dinner. I was thinking about this a lot. A little while ago, a couple years ago, Tom Hartman abandoned us, and I would invite you to come out here. You should bring Kathy and Maggie out here and see what it's like, at least.
Well, I've been to Portland, I think. No, I have not been to Portland. That's right. Never gotten invited, an invitation from KPOJ. Maybe someday we'll make it out there. It's Molly, by the way, not Maggie.
Oh, Molly, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's right.
But, I listen to your show a lot, and I just, you know, I've been hearing about all the suffering that's going on out there east, and it's real sad that people just won't face the reality of science and all those other heretic
philosophies. No, that's just not going to happen. I live in a state that, on a good day, can't find its ass with both hands. We are run by Republicans, like so many states. This is the South, the Deep South. This is the part of the South that was burned to the ground when the decision was made by who was it? It was Sherman's March to the Sea. That Georgia, I guess, was seen as just the hotbed of rebels. So you're talking, when you refer to Georgia, you're talking about one of the reddest of the red states.
Yeah, I never been to Georgia. I went to Florida once, and that was all of the South that I ever wanted to see. I don't know if that's mm-hmm. really the South, but I don't know. I just think that you'd fit in a lot better out here. We'd love to have you.
And your weather's much better, too. But, you know, like I've said to people, I have good friends who live in Seattle. I have friends who live in Vancouver. San Francisco, north of San Francisco, you know, and you all who live out there, and for good reason, you really love where you live. But this has become home. I've been here for, you know, the better part of 40, 45 years now, and I don't think I could leave. I don't know. When it becomes too difficult to breathe here, then maybe so, but we haven't quite reached that yet, so.
Well, you should beat the mass migration because
that's true.
I think a lot of people are going to be wanting to get out of there real fast pretty soon.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, you know, I grew up down in Sanchez's country in Los Angeles, and I came up here, and it rains a lot, but you get used to it, and it's just, overall, the water is so clean and the air is so fresh, and you got to just take a vacation here at least to see what it's like. Because I mean, it's way better, and I just, it really concerns me though. But I've always been an environmentalist, and I know what's going on. I don't think we would have a great conversation because we agree on everything. So
for sure, Dave. That day will come. Listen, I got a boogie. Thanks a lot, pal.
Take care, man.
All right,
bye.
Take care. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Georgia, Georgia, a song of you comes as sweet and clear as moonlight through the pines.
This is not banjo music, right? 10 before the hour. Carl is in Nashville, Tennessee. Hello, Carl.
Hello. How are you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Listen, I have two things. I want to talk about the health care and Independence Day. First, the opponents for health care, they've been having a good argument, but it's the wrong argument, I think. And the argument that they use to people who's against people paying their way is, wait a minute, you're in a state that, you know, you got to have insurance to drive, they mandate insurance, but then the comeback to that from the conservatives is always, well, what if you don't drive? You don't have to own a car. Touché. But the thing that the argument that people should use is you have the right to remain silent. Anything you say will be used against you in a court of law. If you cannot afford an attorney, one will be appointed to you. So you're going to tell me that my meemaw, if my grandmother can't afford health care, that she's on her own in the wilderness, but a guy like a Jeffrey Dahmer type that has killed and eaten human beings are allowed to have legal representation paid for him by whatever state, city, parish, county government in America, but a person, but a citizen can't, it's not a right to have health care? No one ever makes that argument.
Well, I think there's even a simpler one, and that is when you say, well, what about state governments mandating you have to have insurance to drive a car? And the right-winger says, yeah, but you don't have to drive a car.
Right.
Well, okay. The answer to that is when they mandate health insurance, at some point, everybody is going to have to drive that car. Everybody at some point
right.
in their lives is going
to is
going
to get into the vehicle.
Yeah, everybody at some point is going to require health care.
Right.
I mean, everybody at some point is going to have to see a physician or have an operation or wind up in an emergency room or whatever. So
right.
that argument that says, well, you don't have to drive a car, that's hog snot. That comes from
right.
people
it
who
is.
Are functionally literate.
Yeah, it is. I find it amazing that it is the right for a person to be represented by legal means if they can't afford it, but it's not a right for someone to have health care in this country. That's kind of weird to me. Independence Day, I tell you, man, as a Black American, it's always conflicted me a little bit, even as a child.
Well, eventually you'll get your independence, Carl.
Wait,
you know, July 4th is for white people. I mean, come on.
Yeah, white people are on that. But it's always been a bittersweet kind of thing with me, and I assume with most Black people, because I look at it like this. My mother is a fair-skinned Black person. My father's a dark-skinned Black person. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty brown from that mixture.
Right.
And I remember when I was a kid, and this was used to be standard operation on most airlines, when a child would fly on an airplane from one destination to another, the airline attendant would stay with the child until they meet their party on the other end. And I remember visiting my grandparents in New Orleans and flying back home. And when me and the airline attendant, we got off the plane, and my mother, she said, you see your mother? I said, yeah, there she is right there.
Mm-hmm.
And air attendant, I was about 7 or 8 years old, looked at me and said, that white woman's not your mother. And I'm like, lady, I know my mother when I see my mother. And that right there, later on in years, it dawned on me that, wow, my mother is that complexion, not because of interracial relationships, it's because of other things that happened my race years and years ago. And to see my father, my grandfather fought in World War II, my grandfather fought in the Korean War, my father fought in Vietnam, be treated as secondhand citizens when they came back. Mm-hmm. And even to 2012, the Black man in the White House is still treated like an illegitimate citizen
of
this country. It is very, very bittersweet. For Black America.
Yeah, I've heard that before, that it's, you know, you use the term bittersweet. Some people that I've talked to have used the term confusing, or it produces, as a first result, anger. And,
yeah.
and it's not just African Americans, you know,
yeah.
when you stop and
of
think about the
of
people
course.
who the Europeans had to eliminate.
Yeah.
You know, the
I can only speak from the African American
sure, exactly.
perspective.
Exactly.
It's almost sometimes hard to love a country unconditionally that has not always loved you back.
That's true. That's
hey,
very
man,
that's true.
Have a good evening, America. Happy 200 and
whatever.
36th birthday with their beautiful flaws.
All right. Thank you, Carl. Take care. Yeah, and I can only speak from, from a Caucasian perspective. And like I said the other night, the best thing to do is just, if you are white, is just occasionally shut up and listen. You know, that's all. But I just wanted to drop that in, what Carl was saying. The country was founded on racism and genocide. We all know that now, those of us who still have a brain. And the terrible part, and this is a part, you talk about feeling conflicted, Carl. You can only talk from the black man's perspective. I can only talk from the white man's perspective. Let me tell you, to be conflicted, to realize that your bombs bursting in air comes from the fact that you enslaved a whole group of people and genocided another whole group, try that for conflict. I'll see you tomorrow. No, we're off tomorrow night. I'll see you Thursday. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is a referral service.